Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did it change history? Good evening, and welcome back to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago.
We give each movie a memory score and then rewatch the movie to see whether or not it's better or worse than we remember, and then we score the movie again.
With me, as ever, is my son, Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm all good. You?
Yeah, I'm surviving.
Yeah, surviving is always the word, always the best word. Yeah. And, you said you had a brilliant anecdote of the week. What is your anecdote of the week this week?
I definitely said it was brilliant and definitely didn't say that I hadn't had one prepared. Basically, let me think. What's happened? Nothing.
Did you watch the Eurovision Song Contest?
I did, yeah. We kind of did a Benefit of Hindsight does Eurovision thing. It's okay. Quite funny, yeah.
Tell me about that.
That was just me and you. You were there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That was a long 4 hours, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. Although my favourite part was the most out of context sentence ever that you provided. I'm watching some fella from Armenia covered in mud. How the devil did that happen? Out of context, fantastic.
There were some great things. You said you don't get points for cinematography, but if you did, Switzerland would get them.
I don't even remember why.
Malta's staging looks a little bit like the Muppet Show.
Yeah,
there you go. You said the Albanian guy is my sleep paralysis demon.
I remember that one, yeah.
And so on. There we go. So yeah, if you watched it and you enjoyed it, well done you. If you watched it and you didn't enjoy it, you're part of a large gang. I'm certain of it.
Yeah.
Hey, we've had a great question. This comes from all the way from Knoxville in the US of A, from Liam. And Liam has asked this question, as well as saying nice things about the podcast, as everybody does. I always forget to say that bit. But he asks the question that actually he said he went to the movies recently and he saw a trailer for a new Karate Kid movie with the evergreen Ralph Macchio, which I thought was quite interesting. And he said, if you could reboot any 80s franchise, TV or movie, and you could bring it up to date, what would it be?
Oh, definitely stay away from Back to the Future. That's perfect definitely. As it is. Leave it at that.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think, is yours just going to be Flash Gordon, though? Was that 80s or 70s?
80s, just right in the tip of the 80s, 1980. Oh, okay. Yeah, I never thought of that, actually. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, I think The Goonies deserves a sequel. I don't know if it's getting one, but that might be quite fun.
That would be a good one. That's a good shout, actually, The Goonies.
Yeah.
Wasn't really a franchise, but the problem is, and it is a really good question from Liam, but the problem is so many of those 80s franchises have already been rebooted.
Yeah.
So The Goonies is a good shout because it's never been rebooted or doesn't have a sequel. I guess there are... And the problem is the ones that haven't been done are probably because they have become beloved movies. So you wouldn't redo E.T., yeah, for example.
Well, yeah.
In its sort of perfect form. Star Wars has been done 1,000 times. Indiana Jones 1,000 times, and probably 2 times too many. I would have gone with Highlander, but that's already that's already being made with Henry Cavill in the lead role. So I don't know. I don't really have an answer for that. A 1980s reboot of something. I don't know. I don't really have an answer. Maybe Thundercats, the cartoon.
Yeah. That's a good shout, yeah.
I'm going to go with it. It just popped into my head. I'm going to go with Thundercats because I can't think of anything better.
I don't know if... Is He-Man 80s?
It is 80s, yeah.
Because that's getting a movie or something, and I'm not really fond of the cast, so I don't know if it'll do well.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a really bad version of it in the 80s or early 90s with Dolph Lundgren in it.
Oh, yeah.
Playing... the titular He-Man, and but it wasn't very good. So I think Thundercats. I think go with the cartoon live action version of Thundercats. I'm gonna stick with that. But thank you anyway for your question, Liam, and thank you for all the very nice things you said about our podcast. Particularly enjoyed our two Pirates of the Caribbean episodes, I should say. So thank you very much. And as is usual, Sam and I have been away and we have watched the 2012 classic movie Avengers, or The Avengers, or The Avengers Assemble.
Yeah,
kind of depends on where you're from. One of those. And it was called Avengers Assemble in the UK, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, because of the popular Avengers TV show, which was a different franchise.
Was it popular?
I assumed so. Popular enough that they had to change the name of a big movie.
Well, the television series was in the 1960s, okay? So well beyond, really, anybody's living memory. I know that's not true, but you know what I mean. If you'd been a kid in the 1960s and you were going to go and see this movie, you'd be hard-pushed to assume it was the same thing. And then there was a movie called The Avengers in 1998, right, which was a reboot, back on the reboot theme, of the 1960s series The Avengers. But that, so 14 years later, having had a fairly popular 1960s series and a flop in 1998, it was decided that it would be called Avengers Assemble. In fact, Marvel Avengers Assemble, just to make it clear that it wasn't The Avengers.
I don't like it when they do that. You see it on toys all the time as well, that where they say Marvel's Star-Lord, like, as opposed to just Star-Lord. Certain other characters, some of them I get, but, you know, the less heard ones.
Yeah. And, I gave this movie, I thought, fairly ungenerous 5. You gave it 7, if I remember?
Yeah, I gave it a 7, yeah.
Do you think your score will change?
I'm not too sure, you know. I think I gave it quite an average score for what it is, so we'll have to see.
Yeah, I think I was a bit not generous, but whether or not my score will change, I think will depend a lot on this part of the conversation. So I'm going to begin by saying, at this point in the Marvel Universe, we are 3, 4, 5 years in. At this point, we would have had a Hulk movie and a Thor movie and Captain America and things. Two Iron Men. I just sort of wondered, my question, I suppose, is, do you have any memory of being excited about this movie coming out? Was it a big thing?
I tried to touch upon this in the last episode that we did, but I couldn't quite get the sentence out because I'm not very good at that. But to me, this was just another part of the story of Iron Man. The only movie in this roster, I suppose, that I'd seen I'd seen two. So I'd seen Iron Man 2, because I liked the first one at some point watching it at home, and then The Incredible Hulk, which isn't technically connected, or, you know, supposedly it is. But I'd only really known the character of Iron Man. So for me, this was just a movie that he was in. So I was excited to see him again. I had no idea about the other characters. So for me at the time, this wasn't a huge bit of, oh, here's the Avengers, they're all teaming up, this is going to be great. This was just, that's the guy I know.
I can't remember, because my Marvel movie timelines, I find them deeply complicated. Had there been a Captain America movie at this point?
Yeah, the first Avenger. I think, off the top of my head, it came out in 2011, so the year before. Okay. And I think the beginning of that and the end of that lead into Avengers. So they were definitely all connected at that time.
Because I was thinking when I was watching this, okay, I know there's been a couple of Iron Mans, there's been a Thor. I assumed there had been a Captain America. And I was kind of wondering when we had been introduced to Hawkeye and Black Widow before. We must have been introduced to them somewhere in the Marvel Universe before this came out.
Yeah, this is a bit of a creepy fact as well. Not creepy, but weird. We'd seen Black Widow in Iron Man 2. And the weird thing about that is I found out that Scarlett Johansson was around about, oh no, I'm older than her now than when she started in that film, which is a bit weird. And Hawkeye was briefly in Thor, which I hadn't seen at that time. But you're very briefly introduced to Hawkeye, whereas Black Widow was a character in Iron Man 2.
And as we're just organising our timelines, this was the first appearance of Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
So the character Hulk had now been seen twice by different actors, and they just glossed over that completely.
Yeah, I think you're supposed to believe that it's the same. Nowadays, I like to think it's a multiverse thing. So we've seen the exact same story, but the guy looks different. Funny enough, there's a reference to that in this film. The scene where Bruce says that he tried to put a bullet in his head, but the other guy spit it out. That's a reference to an Edward Norton deleted scene, which was originally the beginning of the film, which also has a Captain America cameo in the background. I don't know if you know that.
I did not know that. That's a lot, but yeah. Useful trivia. I tell you what is interesting is that none of the characters are, with the possible exception of Tony Stark and therefore Iron Man, none of the characters are yet fully formed in the way that we remember them from, say, Avengers Endgame or something like that.
Yeah. It's interesting because I was thinking about this earlier, funny enough, that Captain America as a character was really saved by the Russo brothers later on, because in this film he's boring, he's wooden, it just doesn't work, he doesn't fit into that world. But later on down the line, when he's, I suppose the characters have evolved in his own little world, he becomes a bit better, and they figure out his fighting style and how he speaks and walks and talks and that kind of thing. Whereas in this one, it just doesn't quite work. So I get what you're saying about them just not being fully formed at that point. Yeah. But I think that just comes from time, really.
It is. And because Thor in this version of the Marvel Universe is much more like the sort of classical Shakespearean Thor of the Kenneth Branagh Thor movie. And even Loki to a certain extent. And there's a couple of little glimpses where he says something that's quite funny. I did enjoy the line, he's adopted. But that was the other thing I noticed about this movie as well. It's by comparison to the later Avengers and indeed Marvel movies more generally, it takes itself very seriously. It doesn't have much of a sense of humour.
Yeah, you've just made me remember something as well, which is completely, it's slightly unrelated to this film, but it's related in the sense. So there's this film, and then later on down the line, you get Avengers Endgame, which revisits the Avengers from 2012. And in that scene, they try and fix it in a way. So in the 2019 Avengers Endgame, the 2012 Thor cracks more jokes as like similar to the character at that time. But it doesn't quite work thematically. Or timeline-wise, he's just not funny, but they've tried to make him funny later on to explain why he's funny now.
It is interesting, because you can just tell that, you know, there are some movie franchises that you watch, and indeed anything like this, where you can see there's kind of a development that's always been there. So they already know what the... You'll forgive the cliche, but they already know what the end game is. They know where they're going. In this, you get a very clear sense that they really don't know where they're going. They've made this movie. It's an endless MacGuffin from start to finish. There's no real thematic thing that's happening here. It's Loki has done a thing. There's the Tesseract. There's another MacGuffin. There's MacGuffin Part 2. They have to use the MacGuffin to beat the MacGuffin. And so there's not really a plot. The nearest they get to any kind of development is in the mid-credit scene where they introduce Thanos.
Yeah, and it's crazy because back to the backtrack, and the Scepter and the Tesseract are both Infinity Stones in the end. And it was like, yeah, you've just made that up just because it ties in.
Absolutely. You can just see that and they sort of think, okay, we'll drop Thanos in there because people are expecting to see him because people know who he is. But they haven't really got any idea what they're doing with it. At least that's always how it feels to me.
Yeah, it's weird as well because this film is a Paramount film as opposed to Disney. So you can kind of see the crossing over point of where they went, okay, this is going to work. This is how we're doing it.
Yeah, that's very true. And it was much more S.H.I.E.L.D. based than the Avengers later became.
Yeah, I mean, that Coulson guy's pretty funny. They should totally make a show about him when he gets back from Tahiti. It's a magical place.
He should definitely get his own show, shouldn't he? And then they just killed him.
I know, it's crazy.
Yeah, and I just thought the way in which he was killed was mean. It's like Nick Fury sacrificed him so the Avengers would get together.
It doesn't sit well anymore, does it?
It does not. I'd actually totally forgotten that. He's not even a non-character either. You could probably do it with a non-character that you sort of introduce at the beginning of a movie. So we feel a bit bad that they've died, but they're not really integral. That's the guy from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They've just killed him.
He's also... he's in Iron Man 2 and Thor as well. So it's like he's an established character. He's probably got more screen time in Thor than Jeremy Renner did as Hawkeye.
I was quite interested in Hawkeye and Black Widow because why are they in the Avengers?
I know. It feels like they were just in the wrong time at the wrong place and suddenly they're a part of it now.
Suddenly they're Avengers. Yeah. Like, okay,
I can fly the jet.
He's a pretty good shot with a bow and arrow. She's pretty good in a fight, but that's kind of it.
Against aliens?
taking on the might of an alien race. I mean, you have a god, you have Iron Man, you have Captain America, Hulk, and then two other people.
Jim and Jane from down the road.
One of whom spends half the movie being a bad guy.
Well, yeah. I think he complained about that, actually, Jeremy Renner. And then there's a throwaway line in the second film about that,
yeah. At least they gave him a character arc, Hawkeye, which was quite nice. And I suppose what they ended up doing with Black Widow was fair enough.
Yeah. Did you know there's a theory about Hawkeye?
I do not. Let's hear it.
So in every Avengers movie that he's in, the Avengers win. The one time he doesn't show up, the Avengers lose, which is Infinity War. So there's a theory that as long as Hawkeye is there, the Avengers will win.
Wow. He's the glue that holds the whole thing together.
Yeah, maybe that's his exact role.
Yeah. Yeah, I did also spot, we are totally geeking out on this movie. We haven't even gotten to any of the things we normally talk about.
No.
I did also spot the first stirrings of Civil War as well, because Iron Man and Captain America were not friends.
No. In hindsight, I love that scene though. I'll explain it because why not? The whole conversation and argument that they have, where Captain America says he's not the one to make the sacrifice play, and nothing, everything special about you came from a bottle. That completely gets overruled because Tony Stark makes the biggest sacrifice and then Captain America's able to lift Thor's hammer, which means he's worthy. And that's got nothing to do with what was in the bottle. So I really like that scene looking back. Back then it was quite exciting to see them go against each other. But now it's just cool because they're completely wrong.
Let's get a little bit further down the Avengers rabbit hole because I never bought for a moment Civil War. I couldn't see any circumstances under which they'd ever go against each other. It reminded me of a Star Trek anecdote. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm sure all the listeners want to hear it as well. So William Shatner wrote and directed most of Star Trek V, all of Star Trek V. When I say wrote, he was the idea behind the story.
Right.
And as he was writing it, he decided that at the end, in the climax of the movie, would be a falling out between Spock, Kirk, McCoy, and that they would run off and leave him for dead.
Right.
And he would heroically save the day as Captain Kirk. And both the actors who played McCoy and Spock refused to do it. They said they could think of no circumstances under which those two characters would ever desert Captain Kirk. And so the scene was hastily rewritten, even to the point where Leonard Nimoy got his lawyer involved.
Wow.
He said, if you don't change this scene, I refuse to continue. And I always think of that whenever I see Civil War. I find it very difficult to believe any circumstance where any of these people would be fighting each other.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch sometimes, isn't it? Although I don't know if they're trying to do Civil War 2, but slightly different to the comic one in the later movies, but we'll not get into that. Spoilers.
Yeah. Let's briefly mention the things we might normally talk about. The cast. It's hard to talk about the cast in this because they are all so well established in those roles now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're all pretty decent actors.
Yeah, I think they do a good enough job of evolving with the characters over time, though, and you can kind of see it. And I know it's really stupid, because obviously, but them being in those roles early enough and then learning as they go to expand upon it works quite well.
Yeah, and just imagine the fun that you have. So you're an actor, you're in Hollywood, you're pretty wealthy, you're not bad looking because you're an Avenger, and so every 1 or 2 years, you get paid an enormous sum of money to just go and have fun.
Yeah.
And so you don't necessarily get a sense of that fun in this one because it's all new. But as you go through all of the Avengers movies and indeed the individual characters movies, you can see that they're just having a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I think you have to kind of do that with these movies. Or else you just fall into the trap of wanting it to be too serious, and it can't be.
If you had to choose your weakest link actor, performer in this, i.e. they're all great, but which is the one where you kind of go, who would yours be?
I don't want to be really harsh, but if we're talking about the main six Avengers, probably Scarlett Johansson. But that's because she's that stereotypical woman role, which I don't think is fair later on down the line. If we're talking about cast in general, probably Colby Smulders playing, name's just gone out of my head, Maria Hill.
Yeah, she's you can't separate her from How I Met Your Mother.
No, it's tough.
it's really hard to do. It's sort of almost difficult to take seriously. I found Captain America.
Yeah.
Quite wooden at times.
Yeah. See, I don't know if that's just the character, though.
Maybe.
As opposed to the actor.
Maybe, yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably fair. See, would you want to do the box office while we're on a roll?
Yeah, so, go on.
Okay, so a budget of $225 million. How much do you think it made?
$226 million.
So close. I'll give you another guess.
$224
million. No. Yeah, you're so close. It was, in fact, $1.519 billion.
Wow. Making it, I knew it was good, yeah.
It is the third highest grossing movie of all time.
Wow.
I don't know whether that's still true, but it certainly was at the time. It was also, it reached $1 billion in 19 days.
Whoa.
And that continues to be a record.
That's impressive. That's a lot of money.
It's the first Marvel film to generate $1 billion in ticket sales.
Nice.
And how many Oscars do you think it was nominated for?
None.
One, surprisingly.
Oh, okay. Interesting. What was it for?
Best Supporting Actor, the guy who played Captain America. No.
Oh.
Best visual effects.
Okay.
It's described as the climax of phase one of the Avengers Marvel sort of series. Would you say that was true?
It is, yeah. There's multiple phases now, but I think they always usually end with with an Avengers movie. Might not be true, don't quote me on that. But yeah, I guess that was the one that makes sense. All the films leading up to that, and then there's the big one, yeah.
Do you know what I'd forgotten about? I'd forgotten the final end credit scene.
Yeah. The swarm.
I'd actually just sat there, just the five or six of them just sat there eating. I thought was very, very funny. Because presumably that's exactly what they would do.
Yeah, I've got trivia about that, but I think it might be well known. I don't know. It was that end credit scene was added because Robert Downey Jr. rewrote the scene. Hang on. He encouraged a rewrite of the scene. So he brings it up before the end of the battle, or as the battle ends, and the scene was actually added one day after the global premiere. And I remember there's like a clip around the internet somewhere where they're at the premiere and they say, "We're not done yet, there's one more thing to film," and that was it. They randomly filmed it, which I think is another thing, is that if you look in the background, supposedly Chris Evans covers his face because he was growing a beard for a different role.
I didn't know that, yeah, okay. It got incredibly well reviewed, which I was surprised by. It has a really good Rotten Tomatoes score, 91%. It got an A-plus from Cinema Score, which apparently is quite rare. It got really, really well reviewed, like all over the place. Everybody was saying that it was just great. And the performance of Robert Downey Jr. was particularly praised.
Yeah, it's crazy that they never made any more, though.
Yeah.
Wait,
you'd have thought they did. I don't think it is the third highest grossing film of all time, you know. I'm pretty confident that one of the other ones made like 2 billion or something like that.
Yeah, I think it probably was at the time, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's nowhere near the kind of the top end of that thing now. There you go, never mind. Oh, I there you go. No, I'm completely wrong. I was trying to see it. No, it's a long way down now. It's not even top 10 anymore.
Right. Wow.
So it must have been at the time, presumably behind Avatar and one of the Star Wars movies.
Yeah. Why was Loki speaking English to all of those Germans?
And how did they understand him? We haven't even mentioned him. He's the best thing.
No, he really is, actually, yeah. That's another character that I'm glad went the way that it did, yeah.
Yeah, he's actually the only character that's interesting, has a real character arc in the movie, or at least you can see the beginning of his arc. And I think that's probably because a bit of a shaky benefit hindsight limb here. He might be the best actor in it.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with that one. Just because he's British. No. More reasons than that, yeah.
But he is just a good actor, right? The rest are all great. Yeah. Robert Downey Jr. is great. They're all good. But he is if you see him in something else, he's utterly convincing. He is just a good actor.
Yeah.
And I think he's one of those people that gets a role in a movie like this and just absolutely embraces it, both as an actor who's got a job to do, but also probably in that thing where he's thinking, how the hell did this happen?
Yeah. Gets to just dress around in a cape and a pointy helmet. Yeah.
It reminds me of Simon Pegg, him of many things, Fame, Hot Fuzz, and all of those things,
yeah.
And Mission Impossible. There's another Star Trek anecdote. He was telling a story as a kid. He grew up watching Star Trek, and he was just a massive sci-fi nerd. And he found himself at some point in his life playing Scotty Standen on the Bridge of the Enterprise, and he said I can't remember his exact words. But it wasn't like a nervous breakdown, but he said he was in his first scene, he was in the middle of a massive panic attack because he couldn't believe what his life had become.
Wow, yeah, that's impressive.
There you go. That is impressive. You must have, however, in a film of this length, many trivias, out-of-pocket takes, possibly even controversial opinions.
Oh, maybe, yeah. There is a lot of trivia, a lot of it that I did already know. One of which is better written than what I wrote. So there you go. Robert Downey Jr. kept hiding food all over the lab set. And nobody could find where it was, apparently. But he would eat it during scenes. So there's a bit where he offers a blueberry to Captain America and he rejects it. But that's just him having food on set. That wasn't a part of it. And I always really like that scene, especially because Bruce Banner just agrees to it and takes one and just sort of gets involved with it too. It just makes it real. It adds that realism to it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They do that though, don't they? They are all, I think, master improvisers. There is certainly Robert Downey Jr. is quite well known for just going off script.
Yeah. Iron Man didn't have a script, supposedly.
We mentioned that when we did the movie. Yeah. Had no script to speak of.
Another bit of famous trivia, which I always forget, but I like to know, is that they weren't very often, this cast weren't often like together for a bit of fun on a night out type thing. But the one time that they were, Chris Evans sent everyone a text saying, assemble. And it was really cool. Yeah.
and did they?
Yeah, I hope so. Clark Gregg, who plays Coulson, said that it was his favourite text message he's ever received. It has to be, right?
Yeah, if you get a text message from Captain America saying assemble,
you're going to turn up.
there's bound to be a little wee of excitement in there somewhere, right?
Yeah. Who could blame you? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Also about Chris Evans, apparently he was unsure about the line, I understood that reference, which is now iconic, because he was worried it just wouldn't work for the audience, but he was quite calm about it and relaxed when he found out that everyone laughed. So there you go. A little weird way to describe that, but yeah.
No, it's a good line. It's a really, really good line. He doesn't get the very best lines in the movie. They're normally for Tony Stark. What is the best line in the movie? Because there's many, there are many that are iconic. What would you say is your best line or favourite line?
Probably too many, but one that comes to mind, which I probably can't say properly off the top of my head, is when Thor and Loki are having that conversation. And Thor says, like, listen carefully. And Iron Man hits him away. And Loki goes, I'm listening, but to no one. I do like that scene. That's quite good.
I definitely like he's adopted. That's the first flash you get of comedy Thor. I suppose the Hulk's line, that's my secret, I'm always angry, or something like that, is a good one. And then... of course, it's not a line, but the Hulk beating up on Loki scene has become fairly iconic.
Yeah. I also... what? It's gone ahead. Obviously a future callback, but I do like We Have a Hulk.
Yeah. It's
quite a good one, mm-hmm. Yeah. Big trailer moment, that one, yeah.
Why do you think that... Do you think that the reason why the Hulk, after Hulk and Hulk or whatever it's called... do you think the reason why he doesn't get his own movie is because there's not really any more story to tell?
Yeah, and I think later on down the line, they've kind of ruined the story that you could tell. Although I think it's rumoured the other day that there will be a Hulk film announced, but that's later. Yeah, I think it's a hard character to make a film of. Guy gets angry, turns green. Like, how much can you really do with that?
Yeah, it's not much of a character arc, is there? I mean, the arc that they tried to put into it is that he can control his anger and use it to his advantage. But even that is changed later on, and in the end, he's just a big green smashy thing.
Yeah, I do find it really weird in this film though that he says, "Oh." He has a big fight with everyone randomly. Not randomly, but you know. And then he goes, "Oh yeah, I can actually control it." And then all of a sudden, the Hulk is just controlling it. And it's like, he still jumps around and breaks stuff, but he's now taking orders. It just doesn't feel right. It's almost as if they should just let him off as a loose cannon instead.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Hulk, go and smash things up. Well, you don't need to tell him to do that. That's literally his superpower.
Just wave him to go and that'll be it.
You know, as soon as they take off in their big airplane in the sky from the water.
Yeah.
You know that's not going to end well, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's like it's an obvious bit of foreshadowing. That's just like, this is going down.
Yeah. And like, it's also, I think, possibly slightly stolen from Sky High. Maybe not, because obviously Sky High is post the comics, at least. But Sky High did it on film first, right?
True, exactly, yeah.
You just know it's going to break down. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, what are we? We're not going down, we're going up. Oh, okay, plot point.
Last bit of trivia. Robert Downey Jr. asked the Marvel production manager if he could take away the letter A that ended up on the Stark Tower, but he was told that he wasn't allowed it. But then on his birthday, they gave it to him as a gift. Where do you put that, firstly? But cool, but like, where does it go?
Yeah, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it, Rob? Yeah. It's not quite Aragorn's star on it, horse, it's a decoration. Is it?
True.
That's cool. Yeah. That's nice, though. I like that. Do you have out-of-pocket takes, controversial opinions?
You could probably use my controversial opinion as an out-of-pocket take. I think if this came out today, it wouldn't spawn a franchise. It wouldn't quite work as well as it does.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, as a controversial opinion, I'm going to let it pass because I think you might be right. But I wonder if that isn't more to do with, I think that we are becoming or have become just fed up with big shouty superhero movies.
This film is a bit of a classic Skybeam last 45 minutes is allowed fight. And it falls into that era. And nowadays you just go, I'm sick of that.
Yeah, it is exactly what I would say. I mean, we've discussed the movie as if it's a classic and we love it, and it's fine, it's great. But the plot is wafer thin, such as it is. And they get away with it because it's exciting and new. You're right that they couldn't get away with that wafer thin plot now. Mm-hmm. So, and you're right, it's the last 45 minutes of this film is utterly unnecessary.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not utterly unnecessary, because I guess it's a fight, but it's not doing anything,
It's because of that era. It just reminds me of a Transformers film, where you've got as much story as possible with a Transformers film, and then it's just loud noises until it ends.
I was saying earlier to somebody else, I was saying that if you could make some criticisms of things like Lord of the Rings being 3 hours long. You know, they've got long battles and fights in them. And that's true, okay? They do have long battles and fights. So Helm's Deep, Pelennor Fields, and all of that kind of stuff. But all of that stuff is written. It needs to happen. So why not spend 20 minutes in it, or 15 or 20 minutes in it? Because you have read about it, you've visualized it, and now you get to see it. This is just made up. It's just utterly made up.
I think they get better at pace and later down the line with the big action scenes. Like in Infinity War and Endgame, you get these little pockets of conversation, little bits of jokes and humour that just fit in. Whereas back then it was just, let's show all of the action possible in one go.
Yeah, and it worked for them because, you know, it went on to make one and a bit billion, and it was nominated for an Academy Award. It was really well reviewed, and it spawned a franchise that's, you know, billions of dollars. Like if you consider all of the Marvel movies, including the flops, they're never going to go in the red.
Yeah, true.
I mean there must be, I can't even begin to imagine how much money that's generated. All of these movies, all of the licensing, all of the merchandising, you're probably looking at hundreds, but maybe not hundreds, but tens, 30s, 40s, 50s billions of dollars.
Yeah, it's probably just uncomprehensible, really.
So you can say, oh, okay, you can make a movie that costs 200 million like The Eternals and it loses 25 million because it didn't get its money back, but that's like me having 12 pounds in my pocket and losing a quid. It's not a complete disaster. Is
true.
It's a slight frustration, but that's all right. And it's not even that. It's like having 12 pounds in my pocket and losing 20 pence.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, any more out-of-pocket takes before we move on to our scores?
Yeah, this one's similar to one that I've not used in the past. In order to get the Hulk to come out, they showed him the Hulk movie from 2003. If that didn't work, they called him Edward Norton.
That is going to make you angry.
Yep.
Do you think there'll ever be a multiverse Hulk? We've asked this question. Do you think there ever would?
I feel like it's possible.
I think it's possibly possible
soon.
Too.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that. And I also wouldn't mind more multiverse. I tell you what I did do the other day.
The only person who's ever said that.
Well, I watched the Spider-Man movie again. I told you this, didn't I? The Spider-Man movie with the other Spider-Mans in it. I just thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. I thought you could do so much with this multiverse, Cillian. You can do anything with this.
A little bit of a sidetrack from the main podcast. Somebody pointed something out the other day that I quite liked, and I can't remember the example, so maybe it doesn't quite work. Maybe I can get it to work. They said the reason that some films work with the multiverse, so Spider-Man No Way Home works because the other Spider-Men are characters in that film, whereas Deadpool and Wolverine, something like that, those are cameos. So it really works if you make the cameo a character as opposed to the cameo a cameo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man has that multiverse history anyway through the magnificent cartoon Spider-Man movies that were made.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I think both of them are amazing. So the Amazing Spider-Man, oh, that's a good name.
They should use that, yeah.
They should definitely use that. I also discovered that I thought that Andrew Garfield was the best Spider-Man. I'll die on that hill.
I'll die on that hill with you, yeah.
Fair enough. Should we move on to our scores?
Yes, let's do it.
You chose the movie, so you get to go first.
Oh, I did. Yeah. I originally gave it a 7. Still not sure whether I want to change it. I do think this movie has a lot of strong points. Music's one thing that we haven't even touched upon. But I think, again, that's just something that Alan Silvestri is really good at his music and he knows what to do. But later on down the line, there's more callbacks than normal. But I do like the music in this one. It's got some great moments. Did you want to say something else then?
I was just going to say that I wish we'd mentioned the music because the soundtrack itself is very good, but that Avengers theme is, I think it's up there with fairly iconic, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's mm-hmm. definitely a recognizable, yeah, you'll know what it is and you'll love it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one, let's just say that.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd say the writing was brilliant. I feel like it's one of those, let's get everyone together as quickly as we can. And as you said, it was a bit wafer thin. But I do kind of like it in a way. It is hard to watch without hindsight, though. I think that lets it down in the modern age. So I think I'm going to sort of slightly lower my score and probably give it a 6 out of 10. It's not terrible. I don't hate it, but I think I've probably seen it too many times. But I can still enjoy it. It's a 6.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. I gave it 5 because I think it's a middle movie. You know, if there's a 10 and a 0, there has to be a movie to stick down the middle. I think I'll probably go up slightly. I enjoyed most of it. I thought it was a pretty good ride. The fight scene at the end's a bit long, but it's a strange thing that it for me had a sense of nostalgia. Which is a ridiculous thing to say for a film that's only 13 years old. But there was real nostalgic innocence about this movie, particularly in light of what comes afterwards. So I enjoyed it for that, and therefore I'm going to go up to 7.
Oh, wow.
So it's interesting that we've landed on exactly the same score.
Yeah.
As a sort of total sort of at 12, average 6, but for different reasons.
I feel bad now.
No, but why would you? It was a definite nostalgia trip. It was lovely to see the beginning of something and it kind of inspired you to go and watch the rest, honestly. So
I do think for me this is the only time I've watched it as a standalone film since it came out.
Wow.
Actually, here's an anecdote which I don't know if I mentioned last time. We'd obviously seen this and I was only there for Iron Man. So after that, back in the day, I had to try and find the other ones, so Captain America and all of that. Which is also another interesting thing, is I hadn't seen Captain America, the first Avenger, at the cinema until I watched the triple bill for Civil War. And it was in 3D. Yeah.
Very interesting. Cool.
Anyway.
There we are. What is your one-word review of The Avengers? Assemble.
I've got more than one word and I feel like assemble's too easy. I don't know. Avengeful.
Avengeful. I'm going to go with... I like avengeful. That's a good word.
Really?
I'm going to go with... No. I'm going to go with innocence. Because there is a kind of innocence to this. When you know what's going to happen to all of these characters next, half of them are going to be dead, then they're going to come back to life. Thanos and everything else, they just have no idea what's coming. This moment where they're sat eating shawarma at the end and they're being all smug and exhausted, and they've got no idea what's coming. So I'm going to go with
that's so
innocence.
True.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Yeah.
So it's my turn to choose a movie. I have selected a movie that I very strongly suspect you've never seen since.
Okay.
I very strongly suspect you didn't want to see when it came out. And I very strongly suspect that you maybe don't remember terribly well. I could be wrong. So the movie that I'm going to go for is the 2004 classic action adventure movie, National Treasure.
Oh, wow. That's good. I definitely have seen that since. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Good.
But I'm trying to think of the circumstances under which we would have gone to see it that were not.
Yeah.
There's a movie at the cinema. It's Nick Cage in an action movie. Shall we go and see it? It's got to be just, I don't remember. It's got to be just one of those ones that was a wet Wednesday afternoon in the holidays or something.
Probably, yeah.
Could it be one that we watched as a trailer and gave it a thumbs up and thought we'd, and then we went and watched it?
More than likely, yeah. I think that's probably the best, probably how we did it, yeah.
So I'll give you my score from memory of this movie. My memory of it is that I don't think I've seen it since 2004.
Yeah.
It is therefore not one that made a significant impression. I do, however, love Nick Cage. So I'm going to give it 4 for that reason, because it's got Nick Cage in it. And I'll see what happens after that.
Yeah, I think for me, though, it obviously wasn't one of those ones that was going to leave an impact. It wasn't like Indiana Jones where you dress up as the character. But I think I do remember, I probably would have enjoyed it as you say, a Wet Wednesday kind of thing. But I think I'm going to give it a 4 as well, probably for Nick Cage. But also just because back, I don't really have much of a memory of it, seeing it in 2004. So we'll see what happens with that, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very, very interesting, because it's one of those movies. It's on our list, and therefore we have to go and watch it. But I don't believe I'd be I don't believe I would be watching it again were it not for this. There you go. You know when we do the what day is it today? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and there's always a day that it is. So whenever we do that, I just Google it, right? And what I tend to do is I just write the date, and then it opens up all the information you need on that date. But if you type in May 21st, one of the things, you know, it has the time suggestions. Yeah. One of the suggestions is what if a question, and the question is, oh. Is it May 21st or May 21st?
Really?
That is actually one of the suggested Google things, which means that has obviously been Googled on a number of occasions.
That doesn't make any sense. Do you think is that's for every 21st of the month or just May?
I don't know. Is it May 21st? What? It is, however... And I hope I'm not sure you celebrate, but it is, however, International Tea Day. So there you go.
I did see that one, and I thought technically I call dinner tea. So yeah, I suppose I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also World Day for Cultural Diversity for Dialogue and Development, whatever that means.
I don't know what that means. World for Dialogue and Development. Hang on. It was established. It was established for unpleasant reasons. Let's not go there.
Okay.
It's basically it's a day in which we're supposed to say, "Hey, look, we all live in the same world. Let's talk about it. Let's be open." it was a response to the destruction of a Buddha statue in a country in the world. There you go. I didn't know that. I had to ask the internet.
I've got a new segment that I'd like to introduce to the end of the podcast.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's Sam's completely useless, pointless advice.
Oh, I'm up for that. Okay,
I've got quite a few already in store.
Let's go.
The first one is, if you're sick of people not asking you what happened to your ear, cut your ear off.
That makes sense. If you're sick of people not asking you what happened to your ear, cut your ear off.
Yeah, there you go.
It's great advice.
As a slight disclaimer, though, please don't actually cut your ear off.
Oh. Oh, you tell me that now. don't try this at home. If you're listening, don't chop your... You can chop somebody else's ear off.
I wouldn't recommend it, though.
That might be worse.
Then somebody's going to ask you why you're wearing that ear around your neck.
Also true. Do you think,
Light
however,
snack.
Do you think there's kind of a multiverse in which a young Dutch artist is listening to this podcast?
With one ear or both?
Well, I think at the when he began, he had both ears.
Yeah.
And he listened to Sam's pointless advice. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah. Put that in your Doctor Who episode.
Yeah, that's not in the Doctor Who episode, is it?
No, but it is a great episode.
It is. It is one of the finer Doctor Who episodes. Hmm. Where? How close are we now to Cloverfield, by the way? Is this 47 or 48?
I don't know, but it's a little bit too close. I think I can see him on the horizon.
It could be two episodes away.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Yeah. We don't have to do it.
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Yeah, we have to try.
Absolutely right. We have to try. We have to. It's probably one that people are waiting for. You know, whenever we get emails and I sort of read them out and I sort of pick the questions out and things.
Yeah.
And I always say people say really nice things about the emails. Okay. What do you think is the one film people are asking us to do that we should have done already but seem to be avoiding?
I don't know.
Well, it's
Thomas and the Magic Railroad. Ah, Two Towers.
The Two Towers is I would say our most requested movie after Cloverfield.
Well, that's my fault because I could have done it a couple of weeks ago but didn't.
Yeah, I don't know that we have the headspace for 3-hour movies anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you're out there listening, we will get to the and actually the other thing we should say about the Two Towers is that in theory we can watch the extended version as well. Because we definitely
that's what I'm worried about. Together. Yeah.
Yeah. So in theory, that should be the version that we watch.
It should be. Yeah.
Okay. Well, next week it's National Treasure, so. We'll be back very soon with that. All that's left for me is to say goodbye in my best podcast goodbye voice. Goodbye.
And goodbye from me. I felt a bit weird.
It did a bit weird, didn't it? But it came out all right. You'll get away with it.
Cool.
My ear's still bleeding.
Ah. I told you not to do it.
It's too late now.
I feel like we need an end credit scene.
Shall I order some shawarma?
Go for it, yeah.
Okay. Done.
Cool.
That was quick. Bye.
Bye. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?